Hi, this is Buddy Cianci, and welcome to 630WPRO.com. Be sure to check out all of our exhibits on the Buddy Cianci page. And now, enjoy this podcast of a recent interview.
Max Hardberger, I got a call today from the guy reading my book. He said, I got just the guy I want to talk to, if you want to talk to someone who knows about oil rigs and what's going on with BP. But when we Googled him here, and we got his stuff out, Florian Max Hardberger, an American adventure. This guy sounds like Indiana Jones.
He does.
He sounds like really like James Bond. Yeah. It's an American adventure. I'll read this, but bear with me, Max. I'm going to read about you, and then we're going to talk to you. It says,
okay.
All right. He's an American adventure, ship captain, aviator, ship recovery specialist, admiralty lawyer, and author of maritime fiction and nonfiction adventures. Anyway, Hardberger received his degree in from Castle Heights Military Academy in Tennessee, became a licensed aircraft pilot at the age of 16. He attended Nicholls State University in Louisiana, then transferred to the University of New Orleans. In 69, he graduated with a B.A. in English. Now, during college, he became a scuba diver, skilled sailor, and navigator. After college, he attended the program in creative writing at the University of Iowa, commonly known as the Iowa Writers' Workshop, where in 72, he received a Master's of Fine Arts degree in fiction and poetry. In 98, he earned a Juris Doctor's degree from the Northwestern California University School of Law in Sacramento, was admitted to the bar in California. His first book was Deadweight, Owning the Ocean Freighter, a textbook on ship ownership. He followed Deadweight with his first novel, Freighter Captain, a semi-autobiographical account of his adventures as a ship captain in the Caribbean. Hardberger then moved from maritime subject to a murder mystery with his 1999 novel, The Jumping Off Place, which was a tribute to the hard-boiled detective novels of Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett. On April 6th, he put an autobiography out about his ship recovery adventures. It was published by the Broadway Books imprint of Random House, entitled Seas, the Sea Captain's Adventures, Battling Scoundrels and Pirates While Recovering Stolen Ships in the World's Most Troubled Waters, a paperback edition of Seas for the British Commonwealth Market. This will be released in June. As a devotee of hard-boiled school of fiction, he's writing his style off his gritty realism like his life. Now, he also has been teaching English and playing music, but he also worked in the oil fields and flying airplanes. In 1977, he returned home to Louisiana to work as a deckhand and then as a mate on the oil field supply vessel Macobar Mercury in the Gulf of Mexico. And after he earned a captain's license, Hardberger's employer sent him to the Dresser Makeover Drilling Fluids School in Houston to learn how to become drilling fluids engineer, also known as Mudman. And he initially worked in the oil fields off the Louisiana and Mississippi Gulf Coast and then worked as a drilling fluids consultant in Guatemala during the Guatemalan Civil War. This thing never ends. Between oil field hitches, he continued his flying lessons, earning commercial and flight instructor licenses, and took a wide variety of flying jobs, including towing banners, dusting crops, doing nightly check runs for banks, and transporting dead bodies from mortuaries. He also delivered aircraft to Central America. And he returned to the classrooms, and he taught English in world history at Pope John Paul High School in Louisiana. And he briefly returned to the oil fields of Guatemala in 1985, then began crop dusting on a full-time basis in Brew Bridge, Louisiana. At the end of that gig, he went to Miami in search for new work. And this is where the interesting part comes in. When Jean-Claude Baby Doc Duvalier was overthrown as the ruler of Haiti in 1986, trade opened up between the United States and Haiti. The Miami River was a loading port for many of these freighters in the Haitian trade. And after Hardberger left crop dusting, he searched for and soon found work on the Miami River as the captain of a small freighter engaged in the trade. Among his commands was the Erika, a small freighter which transported cargoes throughout the Caribbean. And his voyages on the Erika were the basis of his novel, The Freighter Captain. But recovering vessels is what he does now. Hardberger left the Erika to work for the Miami-based ship owner Morgan Price as port captain, responsible for overseeing port calls by the company's ships. During this period, a Morgan Price freighter, the Patrick M., was seized by a shipper in Puerto Cabello, Venezuela. This action required Hardberger to sail the vessel out of port under the cover of night and without a clearance in violation of Venezuelan law. This operation was his first vessel extraction and is detailed in his autobiography, Seized. He left Morgan Price in 1990 to form his own marine consultancy business in Louisiana. He was periodically retained by ship owners to extract their vessels from lawless ports without clearance or authorities. In 98, following his admission to the California Bar, he began practicing maritime law alongside his marine consultancy and vessel extraction business. And then in 2002, he formed the ship repossession company Vessel Extractions and to extract vessels that had been illegitimately detained or seized in foreign countries. In 2004, he was featured in the Learning Channel series Repo Man, Stealing for a Living, in a segment entitled Repo Adventurer, documenting his extraction of a 10,000-ton freighter from Haiti during the 2004 rebellion and his delivery of the vessel to her mortgagee in the Bahamas. It goes on and on. James Bond. Max, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing better than I was then.
Jeez, my God. You've had a hell of a career here. You're a lawyer, a writer, an author, a teacher, a pilot, a crop duster, and a seizer. You capture your vessels back for the mortgagees, freighters. But I'm more interested, and I'm sure that you've got books that we could recommend. But what I wanted to ask you was this BP situation. You were what did they call those? A mud man.
Yeah, they're called mud engineers. Mud engineers aren't really engineers, but yeah. They're the men who run the mud systems on rigs.
Yeah, what happened out there? I wanted to talk to you about your expertise concerning the what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico right now with this BP, which doesn't seem to come to any end. What caused it? Why are we seeing that no one can handle it, and what can be done to improve the situation?
Well, I was a kill specialist for Texaco. They would call me in when rigs had taken a kick. In other words, it started to blow out. And my job was to pump down a kill fluid, a kill mud, to stop the rig from flowing.
Yep.
So what basically happened with BP, and of course I'm only speaking from what I can get off the news. Mm-hmm. I don't have any special knowledge, but yep. I do understand that there are four blowout preventers at the seafloor. The first one is called a hydril, or an annular preventer. When the rig crew saw pieces of that hydril coming across the shaker, you know, on the rig out of the mud, they knew that their system had failed.
Are you on a landline?
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get a landline because I'm at an airport trying to get on a flight.
Oh, so, okay, all right.
I apologize for the sound quality.
Go ahead.
But basically, what happened was when they saw those pieces of rubber coming across the shaker, that was an indication that they had to shut the rig down and they had to abandon the rig right away. And not doing that was the proximate cause of all that followed.
Okay. So that's what happened. Now, what can they do to fix it?
There is only one way to fix it, and I have to report that I think that BP has been all of these times where they're talking about a top kill and a junk shot and so on. Those never work. The only thing that's going to fix this, whether they want to admit it or not, is to complete the relief well.
To complete the relief well? What will that accomplish?
What they'll be able to do is once they have punched into the original hole with the relief well, then they can go back. That'll stop the flow out of the original hole. That will allow them to cement and P&A, or plug and abandon, the original hole. Mm-hmm. Then the new hole, which has good casing and has a good BOP stack on it, undamaged.
What's a BOP stack?
That's the blowout preventer. That's what failed on the original rig.
So if they drill another well, that's what you're telling me, a relief well, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the timetable for a relief well to be done?
Well, it generally takes about 2.5 months, but they're already down to 12,000 feet, I understand. So
yep.
They should be able to get there in another few weeks. The problem is that you're trying to hit something the size of a dinner plate with something else the size of a dinner plate 5 miles away. So they're going to have to make, in the times that I did it, we had to make several attempts. We never hit it on the first shot.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be, once they get to that depth, it may take them another 3 weeks to a month. But eventually, they will be able to intersect the original well, and that's the only thing that'll do it.
So when they put a relief well in, they will take the that means that the oil will be coming up, or the crude will be coming up through the relief well instead of in the hole that's in the ground now or in the water.
Exactly. You see, as everybody knows, you can't cement something when there's water flowing through it.
Yeah.
But as soon as they get the water flowing up, or the oil and condensate flowing up from the original well, that will allow them to go in and cement and plug and abandon the original hole.
All right, let's go back to Max, our Batman. That's what I like to call him.
He is Batman.
Batman. He's Batman. He takes ships and tell us. I think you've explained what happened. How long? It's going to take 2.5 months to do this, you're saying, right, on this oil well?
Well, if they're lucky, they may have it killed by the end of August.
Yeah, God. And this is the only way to do it, the relief well. They're going to try some other things. They're going to, I mean, how many gallons of oil? I don't know how many gallons of oil is polluting that whole ecosystem down there. I think it's 19,000 barrels.
Yeah, right.
19,000 barrels a day. And that's going to continue for the next 2-3 months. My God, that whole, that place is dead down there.
I'm sorry to say that I think that all of this stuff that they've been talking about, like the top kill and the junk shot, those, nobody would ever drill a relief well if those things worked. So I think BP is just, they don't want the public to think they're sitting on their hands mm-hmm. when, in fact, there isn't anything else they can do.
How could they have prevented this?
When they saw the rubber from the blowout preventer coming across the shaker or coming out of the hole, they needed to shut that well in and evacuate it immediately. That would not have saved the hole, but it would have saved the lives.
Yeah, and boom. And how do these guys actually get killed? They just exploded? Is that what happened?
Right. When you take a kick or when the kick becomes a blowout, mm-hmm. then you really never just have crude. You have a lot of gas mixed with it, especially at first.
Yeah.
And the gas will always find a spark on the rig.
Wow. Basically, how many people do they have working on the thing? I have no idea. 20,000 people supposedly working on this thing between trying to...
Oh, right. I got a bunch of buddies that are working for them right now, 1,350 a day, deploying boom. So they've got something like 20,000 people.
Do you think that there's liability on the part of BP?
The answer is yes.
Yes. And they could have prevented this, and they didn't prevent it. What about this MMS? They're the Mining Mineral Service or whatever they are.
Actually, MMS is Minerals Management Service.
And what are their responsibilities?
Minerals Management Service is the oversight agency in the federal government that is in charge of all offshore drilling.
And I guess they conduct inspections and training, or they see people.
That's a joke. MMS used to call us and tell us when they were coming out. They always came out in orange helicopters. As soon as we saw an orange helicopter coming, we hurried up and cleaned up our act.
Is that right? Now tell me what should have been done there that you can think of. What are the things that they overlook? Not MMS, but the people who are supposed to be running these rigs. How do they make shortcuts that might have brought this disaster to light?
I don't know the details, but it's clear that the science of drilling has outpaced the science of killing. In other words, they're able to drill in deeper water than they can kill in. So they got beyond their technology, and when this happened, they just did not have the technology to kill the
well. That's amazing. They couldn't kill the well, but they can drill further than they can kill.
That's correct.
All right, it's been delightful talking. We've got to come back on one of these days in the future, and we can talk. I'd rather talk also about your rescuing or seizing ships, stealing ships for the mortgagees. That's an interesting thing.
Anytime.
Okay, thanks so much.